100% born in the Appalachian Mountains and made in the USA, Timber Ninja Outdoors provides a range of mobile hunting options to accommodate diverse hunting preferences. Whether you prioritize comfort, lightweight design, or versatility, their two-panel and single-panel saddles collection has something for everyone. The Black Belt Nano is the lightest single-panel saddle available on the market, weighing in under a pound. The saddle is designed with the minimalist hunter in mind, focusing on lightweight functionality and breathability. One notable feature is the patent-pending magnetic stick clip system on the side, which allows for convenient transportation of sticks up the tree, as well as a built-in platform holder. The Nano saddle can be folded up to the size of a Nalgene bottle, enabling easy portability. With a four-way stretch material on the back for a comfortable fit, as well as strategically placed padding for hip pinch relief, you can use code EASTMEETSWEST to get free shipping on any Timber Ninja order. If you try it out and don't like it, send it back within 30 days for a full refund. Learn more at TimberNinjaOutdoors.com and sign up for their email newsletter for exclusive discounts and product drops. When it comes to optics, I get the same question over and over again. What are the best all-around binoculars? Well, it's tough to find something that works in every condition great, but after using a pair of Maven B1.2 10x42s, I think I found them. They feature an 8x or a 10x option, superior low light performance, tack sharp edge-to-edge clarity, a generous depth of field, and a silky focus mechanism. All of Maven Optics have a lifetime no-fault warranty and hail from the great state of Wyoming. I've been using Maven Optics since I bought my first pair in 2017, and I think you should test them out for yourself. Head over to mavenbelt.com and use the code EASTMEETSWEST-GIFT for a free gift with any full-price optics order. For all of those that want a truck bed cover for work or play, Diamondback makes the top-of-the-line, heavy-duty covers that help you do more with your truck. They're perfect for the truck-owning, avid sportsmen, outdoor enthusiasts, and weekend project warriors. I'm currently using the HD cover that is capable of holding up to 1,600 pounds on the top. And then I have the Yakima Overhaul HD bars on top so I can put my rooftop tent on it. When I'm not using my rooftop tent and able to use the trifold design of the Diamondback, I have the Crossbin 8 in there to organize all of my stuff in the back of my truck bed. Diamondback is made right here in Phillipsburg, Pennsylvania. If you want to check them out, head over to diamondbackcovers.com. If you've wanted that hunting camp tradition that we talk about, that experience, but you don't have a hunting camp of your own, you're welcome to come stay at my hunting camp up here in the Pennsylvania Wilds called the Elk Crossing Getaway in the PA Wilds. So if you go over to Airbnb, you can check out our three-bedroom, one-and-a-half-bath house that's right in the heart of Pennsylvania elk country. It's only minutes away from a bunch of public land to be able to hunt, hiking trails, outdoor recreation, fishing, all of those things there. The house is completely fully stocked with everything that you need to be able to spend a week hunting deer, taking your family up to see the elk, anything like that. So if you head over to Airbnb and search Elk Crossing Getaway in the PA Wilds, you'll find my listing there and you can rent out my house. Send us a message, an inquiry that you're interested in it and mention that you heard it on the podcast here. Then we'll get you 10% off of your first stay.
Are you an adventurer looking to take your hunt to the next level? Then you're in the right place. Welcome to East Meets West Hunt with your host, Bo Martonic.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the East Meets West Hunt podcast presented by Spartan Forge. On today's episode, I am joined by my dad, Joe Martonic, and my cousin, Mason Martonic, to discuss our 2023 Pennsylvania rut hunting recap. So we basically pick up where the last podcast with my dad, Mason, and Johnny left off with a play-by-play of trends that we saw, struggles we encountered, Mason's old monarch of a mountain buck, and a lot more in between. I apologize last week. I didn't have an intro here for the audio version or Mountain Buck Monday. To be completely honest, I was not keeping up good with getting these podcasts scheduled out ahead of time, and it was hunting a little bit too much there and down in West Virginia, and just honestly didn't have good enough service to be able to upload everything to get it get it back in time over to the editors. But nonetheless, we're picking back up with Mountain Buck Monday. And this one comes from Jeff C. out of New Hampshire. So Jeff wrote in, "This is a buck I located in early June of 2022 in New Hampshire while scouting and running cameras in a new piece to me of land. I glassed him and had over 20 pictures of this buck. I knew he only came to this cut out on a northwest wind with little to no wind speed. He only came to feed and drink from this tiny pond in the evening. The first week of the season was unseasonably warm with south winds. I held off hunting him until the first cold front on September 24th, 2022. At 5:30 p.m. on the dot, he made his fatal mistake and gave me an 18-yard slightly quartering shot. My tooth of the arrow broadhead hit its mark and he expired in 80 yards. He scored 132 and an eighth inch as an 8-point. Well, congratulations, Jeff. That's awesome. It was such a great buck, and especially figuring him out early season like that. Give you credit, because that is not easy to be able to do. If any of you have some mountain buck success stories that you want to send in, please send them in to my email, bodeastmeetswesthunt.com, with just a short paragraph or two and a few pictures. Try to keep the pictures as clean as possible. And I know not everyone has a great camera running around, but just a good picture of you and the deer and any other ones that you have, maybe the spot, anything like that. Love to be able to share this, give people, paint a picture of your story to be able to share it. So send that in, and would love to be able to share it with everybody. In other news, I guess this is the last day for, if you're listening to this when it's first come out, we have a pretty good deal going on, Black Friday, Cyber Monday deal going on over at Timber Ninja. So if you use the code NINJA10, and then they give you a spot to enter a second code, East Meets West, you'll save 10% plus free shipping. So you can get all that on 100% made in the USA mobile hunting gear. It's we don't do discounts much, so this is a very, very rare opportunity to be able to do that. The only other time we do discounts is if you go and you sign up for the newsletter, the email newsletter at timberninjaoutdoors.com. Usually when we have new products that come out, a big launch, we give an option to get a discount for the email newsletter subscribers. So go and ahead and check that out. For any of the other sales and stuff that's going on, if from the partners of the podcast, if you head over to eastmeetswesthunt.com/partners, you can see all of that and all my normal discount codes that I have there. Anytime you use any of these codes or these links that are there, that helps out a lot and is kind of how one of the main ways that I'm able to fund being able to do this podcast. So any chance that you find that you're already planning on purchasing any products, or you find products through me, really appreciate it. If you use those links and codes, helps me out a ton. And I greatly appreciate that. Other than that, I have not, I'll say it in this podcast, but haven't done the recap yet from West Virginia, in which I did shoot a nice buck spot and stock the way that I wanted to. The plan worked out great. But there's a lot more to that story. I just got to get schedules lined up with Josh Elderton from the Untamed down in West Virginia again. I want to do that. I feel like that podcast makes sense for me to do with him. And so that's the goal there. So maybe a little bit before that comes out, but excited to get that story out there. Still grinding away here in Pennsylvania into gun season now. So going to be out here for these couple weeks and spending some time in the woods. Not going to be hunting every day like I did for the last couple weeks of archery season there, because believe it or not, although it seems like, you know, hunting is what I do for a living, it's actually what I do behind the computer that actually makes money. So I'll be hunting sparingly here in between some stuff, but really looking forward to getting out during gun season and a little bit of a different approach than just, you know, sitting in a tree every day, and maybe do some still hunting, a little bit of that, and maybe get together with the family, do some deer drives or whatever else. But nonetheless, looking forward to that. And with that being said, if you like this podcast, you enjoy it, I really appreciate it. If you share it with your friends and giving it a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to it, that stuff helps so much. And I just appreciate all of you guys listening. And we'll talk to you next week.
All right. We're live. This is kind of a recap podcast because I had both Mason Martonic and then my dad, Joe Martonic, back on the podcast after we just did one, I guess, about a month ago or a little over a month ago at Johnny's mm-hmm. camp. Johnny's missing. I don't know what state he's in currently, but
last I knew he was Illinois.
Yeah, but he's back now.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he's back from Illinois. But I don't know. He might be in Ohio. I saw he was somewhere in a tree, but
always after it.
Yeah. He doesn't I don't know. It doesn't seem like Johnny seems to burn out at all, does it?
No, he doesn't.
I don't know. I can't go for that long, that hard, and not need like some sort of a break.
I was due for a break, and you guys hunted quite a bit more than I did.
Well, I'm just glad you didn't do this like the day after the season ended, because at least we had some time to recover, and all the dark circles went away from below our eyes, and I gained mm-hmm. 5 pounds back of the 10 I lost. And
yeah.
So got some rest.
Yep.
Yeah, not in a negative dark space. You know,
yeah.
You come on here and... You know, it's just, this isn't for everybody.
I wouldn't say I'm out of that yet.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I just the last few days being home and not going in the woods and not getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning and, you know, low sleep. Like I feel a lot better. Like I'll be ready for Saturday, which this will come out a few days after opening day of gun season, but I'll be ready by that time to get back out. I don't know how much scouting I'm going to do this week. I'm behind on just about every other aspect of my life, and it's Thanksgiving week, so I should probably focus on some other priorities, you know. But I guess Mason doesn't really have to worry about gun season. Did you end up picking up a doe tag, or did you forget this year?
No, I got a doe tag, but the past 3 or 4 years, I've really wanted to go flintlock hunting, so I'll save my tag for that.
Mm. Oh, that'll be fun. We'll have to go together. I have my flintlock, and I picked up a bunch of doe tags for different areas just so I have the ability to go out and hunt, whether I want to shoot one or not. You know, it just gives me that ability to do so.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
So that was nice. But, you know, I kind of wanted to start and pick up where we left off last time. You know, we were kind of getting ready going into the rut, and from the podcast perspective, I've talked a little bit about it in last week's episode with Josh and them, but not in detail, and I purposely kind of held that from a recap perspective of Pennsylvania. But now I'll do a recap, and I'll probably get Josh on for the West Virginia hunt, because the episode that went out last week on the West Virginia hunt was the night before I ended up shooting a buck. So I did end up killing a buck in West Virginia and a doe. So that made me feel really good. But so just anyone's listening, I'm not going to recap that one right now, but that'll be coming out in a future episode here. But I'll kind of kick it off and as saying that really right after we got done doing that podcast, that like the 22nd, the 25th of October for me was really good. Like I spent a decent amount of time in the woods. There was some cold weather around there. It seemed like the scrapes were pretty hot and heavy. And the one day I remember I went out and I was scouting this spot, and I went out and I found this sign that was like, it's that sign that it's like, you know, we always talk about hot sign, and it's like when to stop. And I know when I saw it, I immediately was like, I need to stop. And like by the time I thought that and said that, a deer jumped up and went down, you know, over the hill, and wasn't sure if it was a buck or not, but you know, that's obviously what goes into your head at that point. And then I ended up moving a little bit and moving around the ridge, and I'm like, might as well finish my scout. And, you know, I bumped him up and found another big scrape just a little bit, probably 300 yards away. That was just huge with a signpost rub next to it, all this stuff. And I'm like, I think I should sit here until dark, and I just decided, I was like, I already walked through this area. I don't think he's going to, you know, come back up through here. So I dropped down over the bank towards the direction that I hadn't walked and just figured I'll sit there for the last 45 minutes. And then, you know, what do you know? I come back up right as it's getting dark. So I was just sitting on the ground, and a deer blew at me and jumped with some heavy hoofs kind of away from the scrape. And so I hung a cell camera there real quick, and then I got out of there, and 45 minutes later a nice 10 point came in. So I don't know if it was the same deer. That's my speculation, that, you know, because both times he never winded me. It was all sound that I believe jumped him. And it just seemed like the whole reason for telling that story is it felt like testosterone levels were risen kind of, you know, during that time frame, and it was and we had the weather that was really good at that specific time frame.
That's right when I started seeing a lot of sign getting laid down too.
Mm-hmm.
Right in that time frame.
Unfortunately, I was had work commitments and I didn't get out that week.
Well, it was probably good for you knowing what the next 3 weeks were going to take for you.
Oh yeah,
yeah, a bit even harder of a grind. But
yeah, who knows? Might have been done that week though.
Yeah, that's true. But no, it did seem like everything just like turned on, because honestly, in that middle of October time frame, like, you know, that 13th, 18th, I didn't really see as much as I was thinking, you know, right about the time we did that last podcast. But after that, it seemed like it really picked up there. I mean, all the way through, I mean, Halloween was the best day that I had of the entire season. And I thought I was finally going to shoot my Halloween buck, and it didn't work out. But I'd been hunting this one deer, and when I say that, I'd shoot another deer in the area, but I was really trying to focus on this one deer, and he was hitting this scrape, you know, maybe once a week within an hour of daylight and on a southwest wind. So then that's what we had on Halloween. I'm like, man, this is perfect. This might be the chance he comes out. And I do believe that I saw him in the beech brush, you know, trailing on a doe, but I only got a quick glimpse of him there. But before that, it was just like on the 30th, I remember I went in, and normally it's right about the time, you know, things are starting to pick up rut activity, mostly scraping. And it was like, it seemed like there was like no like seeking phase. It just went right to chasing. And you know, there was a buck locked down with a doe right next to my tree that I was going to climb. That was because it was all raining that morning, and my camera guy, Matt, came in late that night before. So I was like, let's sleep in a little bit and then hunt our way in the rain. And that, you know, that happened. And the next day it was just wild, with one hot doe came through, and I think I saw six or seven bucks that day. And I don't want to say I passed on this deer, because I technically, you know, I don't know if I could have got the shot, but there was a really nice 8-point that came out, and I waited too long to decide whether I wanted to shoot him or not. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, and then I was like, maybe, yeah, I think I should. And at that point I didn't have an opportunity anyways, but you know, I had like a 15-second window, which was enough to make it happen at about 30 yards or so. And, you know, I was like, man, I hope I'm not regretting that decision. And you know, that kind of,
they always look bigger walking away too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. So, but anyways, that was kind of that end of October, that first couple of days of November was wild for me. But besides that deer, which I'd consider a mature deer, and then the big one that I was hunting that I believe I saw, the rest of them that I saw were 1 and 2 year old deer, and maybe a 3-year-old. There's a nice 7-point that came past me at like 15 yards, but mostly younger deer that were seemingly going wild there, which is, I don't know, I kind of see that typical for that first part of November there.
Yeah.
Mason, did you hunt much at that portion around Halloween?
Probably only one day in October, and then it was that Sunday, the last Sunday in October, I was out. I don't think I seen much of anything on the Saturday. Then scouting on Sunday, it was a rainy, kind of miserable day. Mm-hmm. And I just had to get some boots on the ground, because I've neglected scouting. I didn't prioritize it. And so I was in turbo mode, just, you know, covering ground, trying to figure stuff out. And I seen a big mature 7-point locked down with a doe. And then I seen another chase, and some fawns, some yearlings by themselves, and the mom could have got shot in doe season, or maybe she was getting chased too. I don't know, but it seemed like something happened that day in my areas where it's like, man, stuff's happening right now.
Yeah,
and it was kind of like you said too, from what my, I didn't run very many cameras this year either, but from what my cameras told me and just seeing stuff in the stand and what you guys were seeing is like, they skipped like the run around, cruise, check things out phase and went straight to chase.
Yeah.
Like early this year.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I just didn't see that seeking phase that, you know, typically like, you know, we talked about it in that last podcast, mm-hmm. about like, you know, those rut funnel areas. It felt like for me at that beginning of November, I needed to really focus on specific doe groups, and when one of those would be hot, but I just never saw that traveling in between. I don't know if you saw much of that, Dad.
Well, yeah, I didn't get to start hunting until that last Saturday of October, as far as the rut goes. It wasn't until November 3rd when I started seeing action, actually. I mean, when you were Halloween day, you know, texting about what you're seeing, I thought about sliding in there a little bit. Been a little bit of a drive, but I thought, man, he's into them. Yeah. You got something hot going on there. But I didn't see the seeking, and why is it? I think the doe population's up a little bit than prior years. I mean, not much, but could that have something to do with it? I don't know. It just seemed like it did, go right into the chasing, I guess.
Yeah.
But, you know, then again, like I said, I missed that last week of October, where maybe that was when, well, you guys were out, so, or at least you were.
Yeah.
So, but, yeah. And the cameras really didn't start lighting up until that last week or first week of November, as far as activity going through, or a doe's hitting the scrapes, and then a short time later a buck comes.
Yeah. No, and I haven't pulled cards on most of my cameras yet, and honestly I didn't really check many at all during the rut. It was which I did run more cell cameras this year, which was helpful, and the way I kind of used them was I had, you know, basically one in every area that I was kind of hunting, and just seeing as activity picked up, and that kind of helped, which for the most part, I mean, I hunted 16 days during the rut and I spent 14 of them in one area. And even when it was cold, I was just, you know, hoping that, you know, right, I was going to get an opportunity at that buck. And, so it was kind of weird though, but like every year during the rut, it's like, each area goes hot and cold at different
right,
times. You know, like yours area didn't really start up, you know, until November 3rd, and mine and Mason's were around that 30th or 29th to 31st of October. And it's just like, it depends on which does are coming in.
Right.
And the reason why I went to that area in that last couple of days of October was because last year my camera showed me that there was a hot doe in there and the bucks were all over that spot. So it was really interesting, but it's really hard to hunt deer when they're in that chasing phase, because they just go wherever the right, doe squirts out to, essentially.
Right.
Yeah. You know, they were running all over this wide open herbicide spray cut, just doing circles in different areas. I'm like, how do you set up for that? You know?
No, I agree. I struggled this year. And I think a lot of it was because it seemed like it was purely like they were chasing does. Like every day I was hunting. And it's hard to, like you said, there's so much randomness that I struggled a little bit this year.
Did you seem like you got winded more this year? I know I did.
Yeah, I'd say so.
And I don't know, maybe it is because there was randomness and they weren't coming where you're expecting them to, and, you know, because they're being chased around. But it seemed like I got winded more than I ever have.
Yeah, I don't know about more than ever for me, but definitely more than usual.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
No, I would agree with that. And I had trouble picking trees because when they were in that wild running phase, I was like, I don't know which way they're going to come from. You know, like,
right,
initially I was set up for them to work this inside corner where there was some thick cover and everything, but all the activity I saw that day was the way my wind was blowing out in the middle of this, you know, wide open cut. So it was just, it made me like struggle with figuring out how I was going to pick some of these trees. And like when I hunted that, those 14 days in there, I mean, I probably sat in 11 different trees all in a very close proximity to each other. Like I just kept trying to fine tune, and I'd see activity doing this the one day, and I kind of, you know, slide over there, and then they'd be over here, and you know, it was just kind of bouncing around a little bit. But
and like you guys are, I think where you're getting at is you're setting up like where you think a buck's gonna come cruising by, but if they're chasing does, you have no idea.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, with saying that, it doesn't mean like all hope is lost. You kind of have to go with this. I believe you have to go with the strategy kind of we were thinking of, like, this is where they would typically go if they're seeking, because there's not really a good strategy for chasing.
Right.
No. Like, there's nothing you can really do in that scenario. So you got to try to set up in those places where you do have a chance, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of my thought process and learning from it. But it was, I saw a record number of spikes this year. Like, just, it seemed like everywhere I was going, there was either one horn spikes or just spikes, and like a lot of young deer, which is good for, you know, future. Yep, right. It definitely seemed like, I agree. I think the population was up. And I think that's why I was seeing more. I think my total ended up being, I saw 18 bucks.
Wow.
In that time frame, and that is an absolute record for me to be able to see, you know, I probably didn't see 18 bucks in the last 2 or 3 years combined, you know, before mm-hmm. that. So it was really good from seeing deer numbers. It was just, I was struggling on the mature buck phase, and I did touch on this a little bit in the last podcast with Josh and them, but on November 7th I went into a spot, and that's when I really kind of clicked to me that I needed to focus on specific doe bedding, and give it a shot. And this spot that I went into was a place, I think it was 2016 I found it, and it was just a bunch of blowdowns in this creek bottom that I know does always like to bed in. It's just like right up on the bank. It's not in it's a big open bottom with a big beaver pond there. And I got up on the bank, and I was waiting. I said, if there's a northwest wind, I'm going to go in there. And that's what I got, which pinched them just below those blowdowns. If they were going to like be scent checking, in my opinion, or in my thought process, was they'd be scent checking the bottom of that doe bedding, but they couldn't go way out because the water was right there in a beaver pond. So I came from across the valley, dropped down in, walked across the beaver pond, the dam itself, and then just slipped up in a tree, and it was really good. But I honestly didn't know if does were in there this year because I hadn't been down there. I didn't have any cameras. It was just off of past experience from 2016. Now I did shed hunt it this previous spring, and I noticed there was beds in there, so I knew they were still using it,
mm-hmm.
and it just made sense. But that's, you know, and I'd also known that area, that kind of leading that second week in November is when they seem to run those creek bottoms a little bit more in that particular spot. So that's why I went in there, and I mean, I climbed up probably about, I don't know, 11 a.m. or so. I can't remember. I think, Bill had killed his buck that night before,
yeah.
and I didn't get to get the work done that I needed. Bill Thompson from Spartan Forge. So I had to get up, and I worked in the morning and then went up and I sat, and right off the bat, I saw two spikes fighting on the other side of the creek where I'd come from, and like just kept hearing grunting and action, but I wasn't really seeing much except for over there. And then right before dark, I heard, you know, kind of a deeper grunt and some sticks snap, and it sounded like on the other side of the blowdown. So I just gave a real deep, you know, grunt, and then I just heard, you know, crashing coming in, and this buck came in, and it was getting pretty low light, and there was 20 minutes of legal shooting light left, but it was, I don't remember if it was cloudy or what, but it felt darker than it was. It was pretty low light, and this deer's coming through, and I'm trying to get a bead on him to see if it's a buck that I wanted to shoot. And at that point, this is where I've also learned, it's like you almost got to go to full draw, whether it's going to be a shooter or not, and then make that determination. But I know that I have an itchy trigger finger if I go to full draw. So I was balancing that and trying to decide, you know, this is the pain of trying to hunt, you know, big deer. And it's like, I missed my perfect window. And then he went out through and I decided, I was like, I saw big G2s and good beams on them. And I'm like, all right, this is a shooter. And I had drawn back and stopped him. And I figured that it was about 20 yards, ended up being 24, but I, you know, held up this only about 2 inches or so, I think we determined as far as the distance there. Quartering away, pretty hard shot. Everything felt good. Deer ran off about 40 yards and stopped. And he ran right out of my camera frame again. So anybody that's watched my videos knows I like to wait until they just leave the camera frame before I shoot. Mm. But he ran out and I just heard him stop, but I couldn't see him. And then he starts walking over and I see my nocturnal hanging out like by its feet. And I'm like, what the heck? That's weird. And
have you ever wanted to have Levi Morgan, Andy May, Johnny Stewart, and others available at all times? Well, you can with Cyber Scout from Spartan Forge. Cyber Scout is like the ChatGPT for outdoors men and women. You can ask it any questions related to bow building, scouting, hunting, survival, and a whole lot more. I think you'll be impressed with how it responds. Cyber Scout is currently out now for a select group of early beta testers and will be available to the rest of you really soon. The entire app is a complete tool for planning your hunt with incredible aerial imagery mapping, journaling, deer prediction, and some of the most accurate and detailed weather data. Use the code EASTMEETSWEST to save 20%. And if you're still on the fence, give the 14-day free trial a chance at SpartanForge.ai. CVA has been America's number one selling muzzleloader brand for over a decade. Hunting with a muzzleloader opens up a ton of hunting opportunities across the U.S., and I've been using the Acura series. But they don't only make badass muzzleloaders. Their line of centerfire rifles are great quality and not terrible on the wallet. The Cascade short barrel is ideal for tight quarters, deer drives, and quick shots in the big woods. You can check out their line of muzzleloaders, rifles, and accessories for every season and every range at bpioutdoors.com/CVA. If you use the code EASTMEETSWEST10, you'll get 10% off of all CVA products, which includes rifles, muzzleloaders, and accessories.
Couldn't figure it out, but he, you know, when I hit him, he, you know, mule kicked and ran out there, which I learned means nothing. The mule kick, it's just a reaction to shock, essentially. But and then he just starts walking off to the side, and I almost got another follow up shot out about 60 yards, but he went down, and I thought he went into these blowdowns and bedded down, because at that point it was starting to get dark. It was over like about a 15-20 minute time span there, but I knew it wasn't good, the fact that he didn't fall in that time frame. But I lost the light and didn't hear any more sound inside these blowdowns, so I was like, maybe I hit him back and he's going to lay down. So I waited. What, Dad, I texted you from my inreach because I didn't have service. Mm-hmm. and I said what happened, and I'm like, I gotta wait. I don't want to spook this deer climbing right down. So I waited almost 2 hours after dark.
Yep.
And then the wind really picked up, which helped me. It was right in my face and it was heavy. So I just climbed down real slow and quiet, left all my stuff in the tree, snuck out and left. And I called some blood trackers that I knew, and well, none of the ones local were available to come, but I talked to Damon Bungard, who I've had on this podcast before, and everything, and told him what, and he was like, from the beginning, he's like, that sounds like you hit shoulder. And I'm like, I couldn't have. I was like, it was quartering away. Now his front leg was back. So but I aimed for that opposite shoulder. Couple things I learned that I did wrong with this is really the first time I was using an expandable broadhead as my primary arrow, and I should be a little bit more cautious of that shoulder, where when I typically aim, I aim kind of right on that crease, knowing that if I hit the blade, like, I'm going to punch through it typically with my fixed blade. But anyways, he's like, I think you hit right on that knuckle of the shoulder or something. He's like, I don't think, you know, saying the arrow's hanging down, that's not, you know, not good. And the fact that the nock was almost hanging on the ground, that means almost the entire arrow is hanging out.
Yeah.
And so I was pretty, you know, concerned about that, obviously, and didn't feel real good about it. And same thing, another blood tracker said, oh, you know, run real fast and then stop and then kind of walk. He goes, sound like he just got punched, you know, in the shoulder, and he just, you know, got stung, and then it was like, oh, what is that? You know, and kind of moved off. But my hope was that he was just rutting and not really knowing that he was hit good. And anyways, go back in next morning, me, you, dad, and Kurt, and we went in and checked that area, the blowdowns where I thought he went down. And we went in the dark about 12 hours later, I guess it would have been, but it was still dark, and went in looking for the nocturnal, thinking that might still be lit. Nothing. Waited till light, checked the blood, and it bled pretty good.
Yeah.
Right at the beginning, but he didn't
look promising at first.
Yeah. He didn't really go bed down. He just kept walking, and ended up falling blood for, well, it was 500 yards according to Spartan Forge, and it was just starting to be drops and drops. And I sent some pictures of the blood, which even looked like a lot, to Damon. And he was like, man, he's like, you didn't hit anything vital there. He's like, there's bubbles there, but they're big bubbles, which is muscle blood. And so then I body searched for a while and pulled out, went back, and a little after lunch, ate lunch, and then came back in and came from a different direction where he was headed, and just kind of sneaking through, see if I could find anything, and absolutely nothing. But from the sounds of it, I mean, it almost seemed like my arrow almost bounced off him. And the one thing I also did notice was, and this is the risk of low light shooting, is brush and not being able to see it.
Oh.
And, you know, when we were looking for where I shot and looking up, I'm like, man, I thought this was wide open, and there was some little sapling sticks and brush and stuff there. So that was unfortunate that happened. I've had that happen a few times over the last couple of years, and it sucks that when that happens. And honestly, my confidence was pretty low, because I'm like, I don't know what to do. I shoot all the time. I feel good. And that shot, literally, I felt as good as I could have. And I don't know. I had talked to Lee Ellis about it a little bit, and he had mentioned that he had a situation where it was a hard quartering shot, and he believes that the broadhead from the video actually kind of hit the ribs and kind of skipped off and went up and hit that shoulder on that near side, even though you wouldn't think you'd be able to do that, but because of the hard quartering angle. And that just, to me, I was like, that didn't seem possible. But one thing I then in West Virginia, you know, I switched to fixed blades, but I shot my buck with that. But I went back to the expandable to shoot a doe, and I shot rib to rib, and it didn't even pass through. I was like, how is this? You know, it went out the other side, but it broke halfway, you know, through the deer, and the deer died really fast. But it was just like, man, I didn't realize.
And that was with the expandable or fixed blade?
Expandable on the doe. My buck I shot with a fixed blade, and it went through the top of the shoulder and blew out the other side and never even found the arrow. So it was just, to me, that was like, there's a lot of energy lost in it, you know. And I'm not saying expandables are bad. It comes down to the shot placement there, you know, 100%. It's just like, that was really an eye opener for me. I'd always kind of heard that, but I hadn't really used expandables a whole lot to be able to know it. But I don't want to harp on that much more. But anyways, that was kind of that really started the downfall of me really not even seeing any deer from that point after I started hunting again, after I decided that, you know, from looking all that time that he was, you know, still alive essentially.
No, it's always a heart wrencher when that happens, and getting back in the saddle is not as easy as it sounds.
Mm-mm. No, I felt pretty crappy about it, and just, you know, mad at myself. You know, you go through all these things. Yeah. I need to be done bow hunting. You know, this sucks. I don't really know what else to say about it, but just hopefully that me talking about it will help someone else kind of learn from it. And again, same thing with, last thing I want to say about expandables, fixed blades, is just like knowing which ones, and I should have known this, but which ones your shots are good for. And like, you know, where I could have sliced right up through there with a fixed blade, that's a shot I can do with that, where, you know, with an expandable, that's probably not a good shot. But then there's other spots, you know, when you have a perfect broadside, it's pretty tough to beat an expandable. Yeah. You hit back a little bit to be able to open it up. So it's just really knowing your equipment, and that's, I failed in that aspect. So, but to kind of bring it back up to more of a positive light, but as we kind of went on through there, like I said, I was struggling to see deer then after that until my last day here before I went to West Virginia, which was November 12th. Yeah, it was a Sunday we were allowed to hunt. I didn't wake up when I was supposed to. Apparently, I shut my alarm off in my sleep and didn't realize it, and then woke up to my driveway alarm going off and a nice buck chasing a doe through my yard. And I was like, oh, here we go. I'm getting kicked in the balls from the second I get up. So here we go. And I went out in the woods and climbed my tree. As I'm climbing, put my bibs on, climbed my tree. The 7-point I passed on 2 weeks earlier, he goes cruising by me at 15 yards. And it was just like, it just was like, all right, yep, this is how this is going to go. And I did see I just saw some chasing and stuff of younger bucks that day. And it was a good day. But that honestly really kind of recapped my season there. But before we get into Mason over here that had some success, I kind of want to talk to you, Dad, about like kind of your experience going into that second week in November there.
Well, November 3rd, like I said, is when it kind of turned on for me. November 2nd, in an evening sit, well, I did an all day sit, but I kept on inching closer to a scrape that I didn't have the right wind for, but I tried to get within 100 yards of it initially, which I sat in the morning a little bit farther than that, actually moved twice in encroaching on it. And then in the afternoon, I decided that I was just going to go ahead and move right in on it. And I stopped at 60 yards from it and got set up in a tree, felt good about it, the way the deer that were coming through that, you were using that scrape, hitting that scrape in daylight, the way they were coming was coming from the left out of the bottom up in, you know, up to the scrape. I guess the scenario of the scrape was it was on the lower bench on a point of a hill. And I started, like I said, over 100, probably 190 yards above it. And mainly just afraid of wind swirling and it's still part of their travel area after the scrape. But where I finally ended up in the evening, I felt good. The wind seemed to be pretty consistent there. And even with the thermals that were going to move in on me, I'd still be good. And then right before, you know, half hour before dark, deer comes from the right, which I really wasn't expecting it. Here was a spike. And I'm watching this, you know, come by, and he's 18 yards to my right. But I'm looking, it's like, I don't have a shot. There's no way I can get an arrow because there's like two blowdowns on top of each other. And it was a select cut area maybe 6-8 years ago, but there was these blowdowns that were like a wall, and this spike was coming right down this skid trail, and I had an opening in front directly in front of me, and then I had an opening to the left of me in the scrape. You know, I couldn't exactly see the scrape, but it was about 60 yards away from me per the Spartan Forge, and the way that skid trail wrapped, it would drop right off the hill there, or there was another one that connected to it. It really wasn't even a skid trail, but a trail that went to the scrape. And he did wrap around and stopped in front of me, would have gave me a perfect shot. And he hung around for until dark, and then I'm getting, you know, breaking sticks off and throwing them down there to spook him away. So without trying to spook him too bad. And finally I got him out of there. But so I'm thinking, yeah, next morning I'm going to have to try to go break some of that brush down on those blowdowns. And, well, I forgot. I climbed the tree and I'm sitting there as it's getting daylight. I looked to my right and thought, son of a gun. I wanted to try to break something down. And I don't even know if I could have, because them blowdowns are pretty good size. You know, I'm up probably, I don't know, maybe 14 feet, four sticks. Yeah, I don't know, around 14 feet is all. So it's bothering me the whole time. About 9 o'clock rolls around. I'm thinking, I got to do something about it. I'm thinking I should go try to break a couple of them limbs down on the blowdowns. And then I got the idea I'm going to stand up on my post on my platform. So I stood up in my post and got up higher. I was like, man, I got a couple pockets now. I can get above some of that in a couple spots. So all I got to do is raise my platform. I don't even have to get out of the tree. This is great, you know. So I loosen up this, or give me slack in a tether. I get down on the first stick, and I'm sliding my platform around. I get it adjusted. Now I got a two-foot step from the top of my step to the platform. But I didn't – I wasn't proactive. I should have raised everything before I got down.
Yeah.
You know, my bow holder and my strap and everything, my tether and that. And so I get up on the platform, and now everything's real low. And then I go to stand up, and then there's a dead branch that's about this long sticking out of the tree, like right in my chest. So I'm thinking, I'm just getting ready to get up and break it off, and I look over to my right, and there's one of my target bucks staring at me at 25 yards. He's a 10, and he's probably about 18 inches wide, probably pushing 140.
Right on time.
Well, yeah, I didn't have a time. Yeah, right. Yeah, prime time. It's just like where I'm going to stare down. I'm squinting so he doesn't lock eyes with me, which it was too late. And I'm thinking, he can't know what I am. And I'm thinking probably me with that stand sliding it is probably what brought him in.
Yeah.
Raking a tree. And so I just freeze. And then he kind of turns his head. And then he moves up into the brush. And it's a wall brush. I'm thinking, there's no way he's even going to go that way. And so he kind of, his head's disappeared now. He wasn't looking at me. So it's like, oh, I got to do something. So I get the bow that's way down here off the hanger. And it's like, I can't even use my this tether on the saddle to even, because there's too much slack and it's way too low. So I got to stand on the platform. So I inch around on the platform and spin around. And just knock, you know, get the release on the D-loop, and I look, and he's looking straight at me through two trees. You know, he had moved about 5 feet up, maybe 10 feet up on the hill a little bit. So I just freeze. It's like, shoot, you know, what am I going to do? And it seemed like an eternity. It might have been 30 seconds, might have been a couple minutes, but finally his head disappears again. I'm thinking, he can't know what I am. So I'm going to grunt. I'm going to calm him down. I'm going to throw a grunt out there. So I move over. I slide my grunt call out. I give a grunt. And I turn and look, and here he had hopped about three hops. And now he's at about 30, 35 yards. And no shot. Just absolutely no shot. So it's just like I'm just looking at him. He's looking back at me. We're looking back in my direction. Now, he wasn't looking up at the tree at this time. I'm thinking, what, you know, I just don't have the shot. And eventually he just went down over the hill. And that was it. He was gone out of my life. So I started sliding everything up. And then it's like, this is just dumb. And I ended up putting the platform back what it was and thought, if one comes through again, he's just going to have to come around to my lane. Because that's just – but that was kind of the kickoff of my mistakes. And there's a couple more in there.
Yeah.
Do you want me to roll into the rest of them?
Yeah.
While we're on a down note?
Yeah. Then we'll bring her back up with Mason.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I had some other encounters with deer. Legal bucks that I didn't, you know, knowing what was in the areas I'm hunting, I didn't even attempt to draw back on. But I think it was probably 3 or 4 days after the November 3rd when I had the other encounter, and it was on the ground. I was going to the same stand again. I'd given it a break for a day or two, but I was accessing it completely different based on the wind. And so I thought, I'm going to still hunt it in too as well because of the way I was coming in. And it was probably maybe 20 after 7 when I got within a couple hundred yards of the scrape, which would be like 260 yards from my stand. And I caught a yearling by itself. I thought, okay, mom's got to be around here, and you got to be getting chased. So I just started creeping and creeping. I did throw, I think, a couple grunts out, but only went maybe 60, 80 more yards, and all of a sudden there's this big body in this cut. And the body, the opening, it was I get estimated between 25 and 30, and it looked wide open, but his head was up in a brush, and he's looking right at me. But I could see the frame. He had a nice frame. I was like, oh, he got to be a shooter. But I'm just getting ready to draw back and take the shot. I was like, I gotta know, make sure it ain't a big four. You know, I gotta look at points. And so I'm waiting for him to turn to see. And, you know, like you said, there was like a 15-second window where I had the opportunity to take the shot, but I hesitated. Then he turns his head, and I see points. And it's like, okay. And then he takes off. And he didn't blow out of there. He didn't run. He just kind of disappeared into the brush. 2 minutes later, I have a cell camera on that scrape. 2 minutes later, that camera goes off, and he's hitting a scrape, 140 yards from me.
Oh, man.
And he goes right by the tree I would have been in. So I don't know if there was a doe there that he just – or if she had passed outside of the camera and he just happened to hit the scrape on his way. I'm not sure what happened there, but that was the second opportunity that I kind of, I don't know if I would have changed anything, to be honest with you, except for maybe getting her earlier and being in my tree at daylight.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which way I accessed, I might have blew him out of there in the dark though. So it's hindsight's 20/20. You can guess all you want. Then the third opportunity was actually the last week. And that was, I think, Tuesday. Either Tuesday or Wednesday. I can't remember the last week here. And I was in a whole different area. And the day before, we had a southwest wind. Or no, it was a northwest wind. And sure enough, the bucks, I'm sitting over a scrape, but I'm back off of it maybe 30, 40 yards. And I anticipated a deer coming, downwind of the scrape. And sure enough, one comes out at about 60 yards. I could see a nice rack on it, big, real big body. And he was just like heading, away from the scrape, kind of across. So I got my grunt tube out. I grunted. He stopped and looked, put his head back down, started walking again. I grunted again, stopped and looked, put head back down, started walking away. So then I snort wheezed at him. Well, he didn't like that. He just took off. So I thought, okay. That's that. So then went all whole day went. I didn't see another deer. Next day I'm in there. It was a southwest wind, which was still huntable for that scrape and for that stand that I had. And I was in a climber in this tree. And I anticipated the deer to come from the left. And sure enough, about 11, a little after 11, big body coming up out of the drainage and had a nice rack on it.
The Mobile Hunters Expo is a consumer-based hunting show unlike any other. It provides an interactive learning experience where you can try all things mobile hunting and learn from the best in the business. Come experience an unbiased, community-based environment where you can improve your hunting skills and find the right equipment for your needs. I'll be speaking at the Nor'easter Show in Mannheim, Pennsylvania at Spooky Nook Sports from August 9th to 11th, 2024. So come check it out or either of the other shows in Michigan and Georgia. You can purchase tickets online at themobilehuntersexpo.com or grab tickets at the door. I'll see you there.
And it's like, okay, I think he's going to be a shooter. And, look like a big mature deer. And he's coming up alongside me. And now I had a doe decoy I put out that morning. I brought my doe decoy, and I put it in near the scrape. I'm thinking because the way my setup is, there's an opening. There's a beach that has several scrapes under it. I consider it a community scrape. Some good licking branches broke. Camera history shows that last week is when the big boys kind of pass through daylight, and it's kind of a transition area. I believe they're coming out of this bottom. There's multiple drainages that come up to this top, and then they feed down. To the other side. So it's a good travel area. And he comes up from that bottom, and same thing. He's about 50 yards out off the scrape, never even looking this way. I hit the grunt tube, nothing. I hit the grunt tube second time. He stops, he looks, puts his head down, keeps on going the way he's going, which would be off to my left. And that's the way the wind's blowing. So I'm getting nervous that he's going to get downwind of me, which he really wasn't responding to calls anyway. So I'm thinking I'm going to try something. So I had some Estrus spray in my pack, which I haven't used it in a few years. And based on my brother's experience a few days ago, he calmed a buck down that was chasing. It started blowing, and he sprayed it in the air, and they kind of calmed down and started chasing again. They were blowing at him. So I pulled it. I reached in my pack. I pulled out, give a couple shots. I put it back in. I turn around and look for him. I can't find him. It's like, where did he go? He disappeared on me. And I'm looking for him. I think, well, he must have went straight away. So I said, so I'm going to just get aggressive. So I hit my grunt call kind of loud. And here he was. He had turned. I didn't know it. When I had my head in my pack and concentrating on something else, he was 30, 35 yards from me. He blew, which then I locked eyes on him. He's looking right at me and takes off. Stops about 50, 60 yards out, does a couple more blows, and heads back down the way he come, which would have been upwind of me. So he didn't smell me, but he knew it just wasn't right. So that was another rookie mistake, I guess, if you want to call it.
Well, yeah, especially, Dad, since on the last podcast you talked about how much you didn't like doe and heat.
I know. I just, and I, believe me, I will not use it again. But no, he didn't get spooked because of that.
No, I know.
It was just my...
You taking the focus off, and he happened to,
Yeah, he made the turn. I think he seen my decoy and was coming to the decoy, and all I had to do was be quiet and wait.
Yeah.
And he would have showed up right in front of me.
Right.
So, I had three opportunities at mature deer, a good buck set. I just blew it. So, then, I mean, and they were spread out enough that it was like once a week over the 3-week period. So,
yeah, it felt like a tough season, but the opportunities were there for all of us.
Oh, yeah, I had opportunities. And, yeah, I can't complain about that, you know. But I did learn a lot. I was just getting sloppy, but what it comes down to. I just got sloppy.
Yeah, it's that hard thing of, like, you're tired and you probably should take a day off. And you think that you miss that day and it's going to be the day, you know.
Yeah.
That's where it really... I know for me, leaving and going to West Virginia was the best thing I could have done, because I was just, I was half there. You know, I was in the tree, but I wasn't really in the tree.
Yeah.
My head was not there. You know, it just got to that point where you're just, you know, wore down. And like, so, you know, for anybody listening, like, you know, my dad and you know, all of your brothers, so all of my uncles, and then all of my uncles on the other side of the family, everybody saves their vacation for, you know, over years of working to be able to take basically 3 weeks off during the rut, 2 to 3 weeks. And that sounds great, but that's hard to stay on it day after day after day after day and be able to hunt efficiently. Honestly, Mason, you know, you actually had more days off this year than you normally do, because you killed your mule deer in Colorado on day one, so you came back and saved a bunch of vacation.
Yeah, yep.
But I like, and I just can't do it when I have the opportunity of, like, hunting in 3 to 4 day stints, you know, like where you took vacation 2 weeks in a row in, like, 3 day windows, you know, versus all in 1 week, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And for me, that's about perfect, because going after work or taking one day off and then going back to work is, I have trouble getting I have trouble getting into it.
Yeah.
Even this season in general, I had trouble getting into it. You know, I went to Colorado, then we went to South Dakota, and I didn't really have any bucks I was real excited about. But, once it's coming time where it's like, you have a few days of vacation coming up, it's like, man, I was right there. I was dialed in, ready to go. And about the time I started burning myself out, you know, after three or four days, it was like, okay, I'm ready to go back to work. And being back at work for 2 hours, it's like, man, I wish I was in a tree. You guys were in a tree.
Yeah. Well, all of us, I mean, we had inspirational messages every morning. And
you need that.
Yeah, except for you guys cut me out of the group every day. Mason blames that on you, Dad. For some reason, there's a group message well, that has all my uncles and my dad in it. And I tried to, like, you know, I started my own thread with I'm in it, you know. And then after two messages, I get cut out to go back.
Tell me about all these text messages you don't get to. So, like, why bog you down? I know there's some of the stuff we say is, you know, texting is silly stuff.
Well, that I know, but that's stuff that keeps me motivated in the tree. All the business texts and all those other ones. Those, I don't look at those during hunting season, but those are the ones I need, you know.
if you go back to all of our, you know, as the season progressed, that last week they got sparser and kind of shorter. It's like
everybody was feeling it for
sure. Yeah, it was
the rut grind.
Yeah, it was a grind for sure.
Well, I mean, honestly, this is the first year that I can ever remember that Mason is the only one in the family that tagged out in archery.
Yeah.
Usually I'm like the last one hanging on to a tag, and literally everybody has, it'd be interesting gun season here, but yeah, besides Mason, obviously, but that, yeah, it's, and the thing is, I feel like everyone had somewhat of opportunities. I haven't really talked to.
Yeah, no, my brothers, my brother-in-laws, they all had opportunities. They all had decent deer in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it was, I guess they had, you know, everybody had their sights on something a little bit bigger.
Yeah.
And ended up, you know, burning them. Well, I wouldn't say it would burn them. I mean, I think it was, you know, I look back and think, well, that last Friday, I had an 8-point that probably go 100-inch. That could have shot, I don't know, but I didn't even think about it. It's just like,
yeah, it's like not saying you wouldn't be happy with it, but it's like if that's not what you're gonna be happy with, it's
right,
not
exactly.
Worth just shooting exactly. Something just to shoot it.
No, and I you know, I've probably mentioned before, I don't like to rifle hunt just mainly because they're out of their pattern. I mean, it starts in bear season when they're driving the woods and then deer are getting pushed out of. I mean, getting a lot of pressure, and then come Thanksgiving, you know, the people are coming up, setting their stands up, and we're in the woods scouting last minute, and the deer are just, there's no pattern anymore.
Yeah.
And so that's why I don't like rifle hunting, but we'll give her our best shot, though.
For sure.
Try to figure out where the pressure is going to push them and set up there, I guess.
Yeah. Well, what about you, Mason, as far as, like, your days that you had off and into the rut, you know, the last couple of weeks there, what were your experiences there?
Yeah, I was off the first few days of November, and my first day of vacation, it kind of started out with a bang where it was a slow morning, but it was like a snowy, kind of snow flurries, just a dusting of snow on the ground, just beautiful, you know, kind of what you dream about for a rut hunt here in Pennsylvania during archery season. And I seen some deer far out, and the setup, I was like, man, this setup is money, but I can have like a 15-yard window right in front of me where I can shoot, and that's about it.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm committed to, like, my deer needs to be right here or else I'm not going to be able to kill him. And the story of that day was they were just skirting all around me everywhere but that 15-yard window. But kind of going back to what you said about, you know, maybe passing on that 100-inch 8-point. There's a 10-point in this area where I was like, you know, he looks good. He excites me, but you know, I want to kind of, like, my natural progression is you want to do a little better. But then that 10-point came in that morning chasing a doe, and he's grunting like crazy, and he's on her, and the doe's running right to me, like, gonna come in this 15-yard window, and then the wind swirled and she winded me and did a loop around, and that buck was right on her, and he, as soon as that doe blew and did like a 90-degree turn, he thought she was doing that because there's another buck, and there ended up being another buck right below me that I didn't see until after this was happening.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as that happened, that buck stopped, and it's like he looked right in my tree and just snort wheezed, like he's snort wheezing right in my face, and I was like, man, that's, and at that point I'm like, man, I'm shooting this buck all day, and I was so fired up. And so that doe actually ended up walking back past that 10 point, and he's snort wheezing and grunting at her, and then the doe left, and then this buck's still down below me, right? So then I snort wheeze back at him. I almost call him back into my window, but he didn't come close enough. He's still a little bit far too, and he ended up chasing the doe back. And I seen some other deer that day, but kind of started my season out with a bang. And then the next few days were pretty slow, you know. Yeah. There's a lot of tree time, a lot of all day sets, and only a few seconds of action, you know.
Right.
Well, you know, it's funny because I felt like this season, well, I feel like this a lot with you, but you kind of call your shots a little bit with, you told me before you went into that spot, you said this exact thing, like, I think I'm in a really good spot, but I've got a really terrible setup, like, as far as shot opportunities. And yeah. And the other thing I picked up from that story was the thing about the doe blowing and then that firing up that buck. I saw it in, you know, trail cameras last year, and I've seen it in the past too, but this year I've seen it so many times because I saw so much chasing where the doe would blow at the bucks just while they're getting chased and just, you know, just blowing at them, and they just get more fired up. So, like, you know, in my opinion, that comes down to, if I blow a doe out, I'm not really that concerned during the rut because it's like that just sent out you know, a megaphone message to every buck in the area. There's a doe here.
Yeah.
There's a doe here. So that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. And they were fired up that day, but, through the next few days there and the following week, I've seen some deer. I saw some bucks that I'm kind of assuming were nice, but they were a little too far away to tell. I mean, they seemed like a couple of them big bodied bucks, but too thick and too far to really tell what was going on. Something that was interesting from a calling perspective this year, and I know that was a kind of a heavy topic in the last podcast, was the calling didn't seem to work as well for me this year as it did other years. But like, I remember in that podcast, we were talking about the buck stickers you killed, and you heard that buck roar, and then you gave a deep grunt, and then the does came towards you.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of picking your brain on that, and I was thinking about that quite a bit. And in two instances this year, I'm very confident I called does in
with the grunt.
Yeah, and the one time it was the same morning, I called two different does in. One, I kept hearing stuff up on the, I was on a side hill, and there's a tram road in front of me, and then there's like a nice bench, or it wasn't really a bench, but it was like where the hill got more gradual below me, and there's some nice scrapes and a couple rubs down below me, and up on the steeper side hill, I kept like hearing things, but it wasn't convincing enough that it was deer. And as the morning goes on, you know, I gave out, finally I was like, I gotta give out some big grunts here. So I gave out the best grunts I could, and then I hear crashing, and I'm like, all right, here we go. So I get my bow, I get ready. And a mom doe came down off the hill and ran that tram road like an 11 or 12 yard shot right in front of me. Like 100% positive she came to the grunt call. And the two fawns followed her. And then later that day, it was like 2:00. And for the past 2 hours, I wanted to move stands, but I kept hearing things down in this beech brush like 100 yards away. And the sounds I was hearing just made me feel like there was a buck in that beech brush and it wasn't coming out. Like, I swear sometimes I hear antlers tick branches. So it was interesting enough that it kept me there in the stand, even though I wanted to move. And eventually that pocket of beech brush that was 100 yards away just blew up. And I seen a brown body go darting through one opening and then stop. And then it was silent. It's like, what the heck? So I was like, the grunt worked before, I'm going to grunt again, you know? So I grunt, and I hear like one step, then nothing. And this is like 5 minutes go by, and I'm like, they're waiting to hear, because it was a loud day with the leaves. They're waiting to hear some...
Jason or something.
Yeah.
Ground movement.
Some ground movement. So I'm taking my bow rope, which has a clip at the bottom, and it's like the weight of paper clips, and I'm bouncing that off the ground. I was like, this sucks. This ain't doing nothing. this doesn't even sound like a mouse.
You should load your bow down, drug it.
Yeah. So then I hear
that's
some
what Johnny would do.
Yeah. I should have done something.
You should have carried Johnny's water jug and had it filled up and dropped that down.
Yeah, but that wasn't working. So then a little time goes by. I grunt again. Nothing. Then I take the carabiner clip from my harness and I start just grinding it into the tree that I'm in. And that got the doe curious enough that the doe started walking just to see what was going on. I made it sound like a buck rubbing his horns, you know? And the doe came up and she had a nice 8 or 9 point with her. Like a real nice 3-year-old. And he's coming in, I was gonna shoot him. And I got really excited and I was gonna shoot him, and then I just got so excited, I was like, I went from having a tough few days to thinking like, man, I don't want my season to be over yet. You know, I ended up letting him walk. And then it was one of those times where he started walking. I mean, he made a scrape right below me, 22 yards, just begging for it. And he started walking away, and, you know, you have a little bit of regret. Like, man, I should have capitalized on that.
Going away, yeah.
And so I started getting some action. That was refreshing, you know, kind of. Coming off a tough few days there, and then having that action, and not much else happened until I got my buck, really. So I don't know if you want to dive into that right now.
Let's dive right into that.
Yeah, let's get a good pick.
I want to bring up one other thing. Was before we get into that, I'm going to set the base. There's two things that happened there. Talking about sound, Mason texted me the one day we were sitting in the tree. He goes, the squirrel is sounding like split G2s rubbing. How did you word that?
I don't remember.
Something about you, like, the squirrel sounds like split G2s
raking the
ground or something. And I was just cracking up. I don't know why that just sent me over the edge of the tree. I was laughing. But then, all right, so the night before you killed your buck, I'm driving to West Virginia. So this is November 13th. And we talked on the phone for like an hour, you know, and you're going back and forth with your strategy. And I'm like, man, November 14th is the number one day that I've seen on my cameras. And I haven't been here for the last 3 years to hunt around that date, but I was like, and you killed stickers that day. I was like, mm-hmm. The biggest of the big.
I killed my biggest buck that day.
Yeah. See, it seemed to move that day for whatever reason. And we're talking about it, and you're going through. You're hunting this buck, and you're like, I don't feel like I'm on his, you know, I don't feel like I'm in his zone, you know, but you're like, and then you kept just talking about this bench. You just kept talking about this bench, and like, and he's like, well, I could go in this area, but I haven't been really in there in 2 or 3 years to scout. I have to scout, and he's going through, and I'm like, in my head, I'm like, he made his decision where he needs to be already, and it's this bench, you know, and then eventually, you know, I'm not a person that Mason should listen to it all from an advice standpoint, because he knows what he's doing. But I was just, all I said was, I was like, sounds like you know where you need to go from an opportunity standpoint. But it was just funny, you know, that night before you were just like, I don't know. I don't know what to do. I don't know.
Days are running out.
It's getting to the end.
Second guessing yourself.
I'm like, is this going to be the year that, you know, Mason flops? Does he have to get the gun out that he doesn't even know where it's at? Like, what's going to happen here? But anyways, that just lead into that day.
Yeah, so I wasn't targeting a buck this year, but there, as the season morphed on, there was definitely one that I wanted, you know, and I it was an area I haven't scouted in a few years, and so it was kind of just like flying from the hip the entire season. I had one camera in this area, and it was a cell camera. And it never took a picture after October 29th, I think, or October 30th. So, you know, I don't know what to think about that.
Yeah.
And so I have no trail cameras. I'm kind of just rolling off a sign, just flying by the seat of my pants here. And anyways, I get to this morning after talking to Bo, and I want to sit on this bench. And it's a spot, it doesn't really have much sign. It just sets up and feels like a place you got to be. There's really subtle features like some rocks and some blow down trees that kind of funnel deer to the edge of this bench, and coming up coming out up out of the side hill where there's some blow down trees and the vegetation is like just stuff deer kind of like to feed in. And then that bench kind of leads right into this gully where there's a clear cut, right? So it just makes sense. Like everything should be, if something's cruising, they should come right through here. Like, and where I'm set up, it's like between a blow down tree, the edge of the bench, and I'm right on the edge of the bench. And it's like 22 yards between this blow down tree and where I'm at. And it feels like everything should funnel right between here.
Yep.
And, so walking in that morning, you know, I'm going to this bench I was just talking to Bo about, and the winds, I have the right wind for it. Everything should be good. And walking up through this gully, I walk up through this gully and then I just pop up to the edge where this bench is. And walking up through this gully is where all the deer sign is. So all the deer signs below me, but I feel like I got to be on this bench. I don't know why. I could have seen double the amount of deer if I sat in this gully, maybe. I don't know. But walking up this gully in the morning, I see eyes, and they look like they're 2 feet apart. And I'm like, man, that's the buck I'm after right there. I just screwed it up. it's over an hour before it gets light, and I already screwed my hunt up, you know? Yeah. So I'm like, you know, it's they should be cruising. Who knows what's going to come by? And maybe it wasn't my buck, you know? I'm sure it was an average deer.
Yeah.
And so I go a little bit past where that deer was, and I go up, and I go up on the bench that I'm supposed to be on, and from there there's not too much of the story yet. The sun was coming up at my back, and that morning, and it was just a nice morning, and I remember seeing my shadow on the ground and thinking, like, man, I gotta watch my shadow if something comes in, because I don't have a lot of cover in this tree. I'm kind of just out in the open, which I don't like, but I'm a guy that always prefers to be in the right spot than have cover. You know what I mean? Like, I want to be in the spot instead of having the cover to...
Yeah.
Like, I'll take the chance of them seeing me and just try and be still, try and blend into the tree trunk. And anyways, this buck starts coming in. And I get up, I get ready, and he's cruising at a pretty good pace, you know? So he's coming in quick, and I'm running out of trees for him to go behind for me to draw. But I don't want to draw too early, because, you know, they can stop and stand there for a while too.
Yeah.
You know, so they're coming in, he's closing, he's like 60, 50, 40, 30. He's like, okay, I got like two more trees. So he's like 30, and he goes behind two big cherries that are stuck together. It's like, perfect. I start drawing back, and I get to half draw, and he stops. And it took me like a couple days to really think about what happened, you know, because I thought my wind was great. I'm sure it probably still was at that time. And he just stopped. Like, he just was like, whoa, something's going on. And so I'm at half draw, and he's stopped at 30 yards behind two trees, and there's nothing I can do. And I'm holding the half draw, and it's so quiet you can hear a mouse fart here. And I don't want to move, because I think he's going to hear me. And the longer I sit at half draw, the more my arrow starts shaking in my rest. pretty soon, it sounds like he just flicked the door stop. My arrow flicking around in my rest, right? So I'm like, this ain't going to work. So I just slowly let down, you know. And he's still stopped there. So, like, okay, this is okay. So a couple minutes goes by, and he cruises. Did I talk about him seeing my shadow?
Mm-mm, no.
Yeah, so a couple days goes by, and I think about it, and I think that he seen my shadow when I was drawing.
Ah.
My shadow was right in the path that he was going to.
Okay.
So I think he's seen the shadow move on the ground, and he stops like, whoa, what was that, you know? But anyways, I get down half draw. We wait. We kind of have a standoff for a while, then he starts walking straight away behind these pine trees. I'm like, I'm never going to get a shot here. He's just going to walk right behind these trees out of my life. And then he veers out from behind him, and I grunt, and I find a hole, and I'm already pulled back at this point, and I find a hole, and I was like, I think I can make this work. And I just executed my shot, and he ran 50 yards up the hill and tipped over.
Oh, and how far did you think that was?
I didn't know at the time. I think I shot for upper 30s, and I think he dropped a little bit too with the shot, which helped. But I pretty much hit right where I was aiming.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah. He was at 40.
Nice. That's awesome. And so for anybody listening, I forgot to tell Mason to bring his rack to work. So when he came here afterwards, he'd have it. But it's one of the coolest deer that I've seen. And what you didn't say was this is a deer that you thought was dead for 2 years, if you want to get an idea for age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's a really cool deer. And him coming in, there's another old deer. I didn't run any cameras here, so I don't know. But not that far away, there's another really old deer that was similar. But not as heavy, but pretty similar. And I was thinking it was him, but the closer he got, the more I realized it wasn't him. But he looked familiar.
Yeah.
You know? And then even when I walked up to him, I'm like, this deer looks so familiar to me, but I couldn't believe it was that same deer, you know? Mm-hmm. But no, it was a really good surprise.
Yeah. I mean, are you going to send the teeth out?
No.
You're not going to?
No, I threw them in a dumpster already.
Of course you did. But you believe it, you could be 10 plus years old. Or at least 8 or 9. No.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd lean more towards 10. I think 8 would be very conservative.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, you have a lot of prior photos other years of him.
Yeah,
you've shown us the other day.
I don't have a lot. I have some from 2020 and 2021. And in 2020, I thought he was going downhill. He was just a super massive 7-point. You know, short time, just looked like an old buck going downhill, you know. 2020, he was actually a little bigger, but he still looked like just an old buck going downhill, but he was a 9-point that year. And then there's another guy in the area it seems like he runs a lot of trail cameras. And after I killed him, you know, we started talking about it, and he sent me a bunch of pictures.
Oh.
And he had pictures of him from 2018 all the way to 2022, or maybe it's 2017 to 22, or I don't remember which years it was, but he had a lot of history with the deer too. And all his pictures, you know, he was a mature buck.
Yeah.
So I don't know how old he was, but he's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's a heavy rack.
I love that.
Just has age to it.
Chocolate and just heavy and just gnarly looking deer. And he's 9-point, right? Yeah, just an absolute gnarly looking.
Yeah, and I remember that buck you shot with Johnny. The beams and some of the points were all twisted up and gnarly. And I was like, man, boy, I love when these bucks get old and get these twisted up racks. And it's like every point on this deer is massive and twisted up.
Yeah, yeah. We were doing the mass measurements and stuff of him yesterday. It was just like he didn't lose anything like the whole way out. It's pretty crazy. Yeah, no, that's... That's pretty awesome. And it was funny when I got the text from my dad first, because that was part of the group message that I wasn't a part of, that he's like, Mason killed a big one. I'm like, no way. And then you called me. I don't remember. I might've been hunting in West Virginia at the time.
Yeah,
I was. And I saw your phone call. I got an answer and you told me. I was like, oh my gosh. And you're just like this old gnarly thing. You sent me the picture. I'm like, that is absolutely awesome.
We really didn't know if you shot a big one, but we kind of figured it probably was.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because what I say to you, I said...
He was holding out for a split G2 or something.
Yeah, something like that. And
I wonder which one it was.
Or
I wonder which buck it was.
Yeah. Yeah, we were speculating, you know, what it could have been at that point. But pretty awesome to be able to see that. And it's just, you know, a testament to, you know, coming down to the end of the season, anything can change at any time. And that's just the absolute nature of it, as much as, that's what now we, as me and my dad, have to have in our minds, we come into gun season.
Any moment. And I got to give you guys a lot of credit too, because you guys grounded out until, not so much you because you're in West Virginia, but some of you guys,
earlier.
Even though that last day was miserable with a lot of rain, and you guys grounded out.
Oh, yeah, I hit the ground probably about noon when the rain started. I think rain probably started a little after 11. Well, it sprinkled some in the morning, but that was my game plan, because we didn't have a lot of, it was pretty dry. It was noisy. I mean, we had some rain early that last week of October when I couldn't hunt. So I couldn't do a lot of steel hunting. I tried. I mean, I did have that one encounter, but that was on a skid trail that, you know, it was kind of quiet. There was some grasses walking in. But the conditions weren't favorable to do a lot of steel hunting for me anyways.
No, I agree with you.
And that last day, it's like I was just dying to get on the ground. And so when that rain started, it's like, okay, here we go. And I actually seen more deer that day than I did any other day. You know, I had four, I made out four. One was a button buck. I could have shot it. Caught it bedded 15 yards, stands up, throw the binos on, and you see the nubs, and it's like, just didn't want to leave. Then there was three others that I heard blow, wind shifting and that, and then another big body. I probably seen seven, eight deer that day, or that afternoon. But yeah, it was a, but I just wish I had more days like that, you know.
Yeah, no doubt. It was a dry season.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it definitely was. You know, the one thing I'll say also that I struggled with this year was, as I was going through it, I knew I was in a good area and that they'd come through there eventually. At least that's what I thought. But it started coming in my mind, am I putting too much pressure on this spot? And is that why, you know, things started to slow down? But then it also, you know, I was like, I want to go check things out, but I don't want to miss that time in the tree when something could come by. And it's that constant, you know, juggling act of like, do I go and scout, or am I in the spot that I need to be and I just need to wait it out? Because, you know, that first week in November, I didn't mention this, but all of those bucks I saw were between 10 and 2. They were all middle of the day. Then the second week, it changed to everything I saw was right before dark. It was just an observation. I'm not saying there should be anything that's 100% learned from that, but it was very consistent, though, that first week that it was 10 and 2. It was like middle of the day type of deal. And that was just something that I picked up on. But now going into rifle season, you know, I really haven't thought about it a whole lot yet, but I do have... usually pull your cameras, Dad, you know, before gun season so they don't get stolen. I leave mine out, and I have some places that I know historically during gun season I get pictures of bucks. So I'm thinking that's going to be kind of my focus. I think I'm going to take it off that specific deer because that area gets absolutely hammered with people, and I don't want to push them to anybody else either. So I'm thinking I might... at least for the first few days. Like, the first few days of the season of gun season are always the hardest for me because I don't want to push anything to anybody else either. But it does seem like in the previous years, after you get past those first few days, pressure does die down quite a bit. And you know, then I can get out and do some different stuff. But I know some areas that have historically, from my trail cameras in gun season, hold deer. And that's probably what I'm going to focus on a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know if I got to talk to you after yesterday evening, but I did a lot of scouting yesterday, and that 110 I picked back up that actually ran with stickers. So at that time, I figured he was probably a three-year-old, so he's probably, what, 5'6" now?
Yeah.
So he's definitely a shooter without a doubt, and I just started picking him up. Well, I checked the camera here. There's no cell service there, so it's a regular camera. But for the week prior, he was there daylight twice and like three other evenings or nights. So, you know, that's where I end up hunting the last couple of days. Anyways, I'm trying to figure him out for rifle. And, you know, putting it all together over the years where I've been filming and what scrapes and what areas, I kind of went right in the middle of it. And sure enough, I found a nice bed and some big shit. I mean, big turds. I mean, and they were fresh. It's like, this is where one of his bedding areas is. But looking at the big picture, I know it's a heavily pressured area. You know, if I try to get in there close, am I going to blow him out? And then this is the year he gets killed, but not by me. You know, they're old for a reason.
Yeah.
They know where they got a good bedding area. They know where to hunker down. And it's just like, you know, kind of when I was hunting stickers, I think I even told you, I said, if I don't shoot them in archery, I'm not going to hunt them in rifle because I know I'll push them. I know too much about them. Yeah. I know where he's at now, and I don't want to, if I have one opportunity, if I can't close that deal, he's fair game to everybody. He's blown out now. So I'm bouncing around right now on where to go. What I'm going to, you know, kind of same thing with you is, you know, what buck am I going to go after that if I do blow him out, he has less of a chance of getting shot, I guess. And, you know, give me some fun next year again. But then again, maybe I can kill him, though, if I do it right.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, that's a tough battle as far as, like, you know, balancing that. And honestly, like, from the reason why I'm not going after the buck that I want to shoot during rifle season is I don't know where he goes during gun season. Like, my cameras all die in that area during that time. There's so many people. It's just, I feel like my odds are low. I think if I felt like I had a chance, I would risk it.
Well, let me go in there. I'll risk it for you.
Well, then I'll go to your spot.
If I blow him out, he gets killed. It's not one of my bucks.
Yeah. There's more bucks out there.
Yeah.
No, sometimes, though, it actually is closure. It's like, okay, I don't have to chase him no more. If he doesn't get shot by somebody else.
It is a funny thing how that works out.
Yeah. But it's kind of, it's a new
game.
Yeah. Well, yeah, now we have Mason as the dog. So if we need somebody to do a little bit of a push or anything for us.
I don't know. And years past, you guys didn't do very well with feeding the dog. You got to bring snacks for the driver.
Mason shows up with no food, no water, and expects us just to have it all for him.
I'm usually one of the dogs, too, and I do agree with it. Yeah. The posters weren't feeding the dogs.
You can't kick your dog, man.
I'll feed you, all right?
Yeah, I'll bring better food. I'll bring some big trucks for you afterwards.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yep, so just know when everyone's texting you, hey, Mason, what are you doing this evening? You think of,
there's always the argument, too, that you hunt better when you're hungry.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but you're not having to hunt, so that's the thing.
Yeah, but, you know, if it comes down to, you know, I want to make sure I push a buck out of this treetop, or I want to walk around the treetop, you know, that's a factor.
Yeah. So last thing I'll say is, Dad, if you're, you know, when you're thinking about gun season and going in here, are you, the spot that you may or may not choose, are you basing that off of where you think pressure is going to come from? Or are you basing that off of where you think that deer is going to live? Or does that kind of go hand in hand?
Yeah, it kind of goes hand in hand. I mean, this bed, you know, on this, I guess since I talked about this particular buck, this bed that I found, I could see it being a hunker down spot for him under pressure. But for me to be able to get in there close, because I think once he hunkers down, I don't think he's going to move.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I don't know. I got a tree picked out. I'm probably 80, 90 yards from the bed. I can see the tree from the bed. I don't know if it's a smart move or not. And he may not even be in that area, and it might be, I might not see a deer all day, you know?
Yeah.
But then I may not go after him. I mean, there's a couple of those other, you know, my other areas that I actually, and I didn't talk about this earlier, but two of the spots that I was hunting had active logging going on not too far from me, within 300-400 yards, and which changed some of the travel. It's not a bad thing, but I wish I would have known it prior to the season starting that it was that changed, and I might have set up a little bit differently. But nevertheless, knowing what I know now about those areas, I have a different game plan, you know, for gun season if I go to them instead.
Yeah.
I mean, the second rut, I got to, you know, I don't know when that's going to kick in here, if it's going to be later in our gun season. But, I mean, there's still rut activity happening right now, which we're still a week away from our, yeah, not quite a week, I guess, from our gun season. It's the end of this. What's Saturday? What's today? Monday.
Monday, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, you're going to have that trickle effect afterwards always. But, I'm not sure yet. I'm still pulling camera cards and, you know, going to do some scouting after work and seeing what makes sense to me. And I may play it safe Saturday and Sunday, and then see what kind of pressure there is Monday, because I do have Monday off. Other than that, it would be the following Saturday is about what I got left.
Yeah, I do think that the fact that there was more deer, my opinion is, like, it seemed like there's more deer this year in these areas, that the second rut might be a little stronger, you know, because maybe some of the does didn't get bred, you know. That's just...
Makes sense.
That's my opinion, so... I got some places, picked out for certain weeks that I know historically have been good during this time. I need to get into one of them this week and check cameras, because the thing is, the one area that I know is good didn't have any bucks this year that I really wanted to hunt there, but maybe if I go in and check cameras, because I haven't been in there since October, that maybe something showed up that makes me, you know, gives me hope to go back in there. Because I know if I go there, I'm going to have an opportunity at a buck. I just don't know if it's a buck that I want to shoot. So, and we'll see.
Got to try it.
Yeah.
And then looking into it too, as we lead into it, I got to see where the wind's going to end up, you know, for the first day. And that's definitely come into play. I don't want to go in there and blow everything out with my wind.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm not sure where I'm going to end up yet.
Just sleep buck in the tree.
Yeah. But, yeah, we'll see. Hopefully it's not as disappointing as I think it's going to be.
Dang. Whoa.
I know.
A better note than that.
Yeah. I just hate the bucks under pressure. You can just not predictable.
I don't know. I do think, though, if once you get past the first couple days, there's so many more people archery hunting now with crossbows that – it seems like gun season has less pressure than it did when I was a kid.
It does. You're right about that.
So, I don't know. Even when we had Lee and those guys from Seek One here last year, we didn't run into really anybody in the woods. That was the second week, you know. But no, there wasn't really anybody in the woods at that time. So, there's, you know, now they might be in more hiding spots, not the spots that you typically find them, bedding or whatever in archery. But, you know, you can find some somewhat unpressured deer. So I'm going to use this as an opportunity to also, like, if I want to just go still hunt and scout an area and maybe, you know, I get a surprise buck that I don't know about, or like, I like, that's what I do love about gun season, is I can go into areas that I just want to hunt, like that have, don't know anything about the history, and just,
there's something about first day magic. It's like, who knows what's going to happen.
Yeah. So that's the plan.
Well, I always use gun season as a fallback. If I, you know, archery, you know, try to hunt a mature buck, but gun season is more to, even if it's a legal buck, because I do like to eat them.
Yeah, you just have fun too. You know,
but I do have some doe tags, so we'll see. I'm not sure what I'm going to do yet, how it's going to play out, but
you got to hold out and just shoot a doe if you need meat. I'll give you meat if you need it.
Here we go.
But one thing's for sure is our archery season came and went just like a blink of the eye. It was so quick.
Yeah. Cool.
Always have late season too.
Yeah. Well, I guess with that being said, let's end this one. So thanks, guys, for coming back on. Really appreciate it.
No problem.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, we'll see you.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of East Meets West Hunt with your host, Bo Martonic. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit eastmeetswesthunt.com, Facebook at East Meets West Outdoors, and Instagram at East Meets West Hunt. If you enjoyed today's episode, please review and subscribe, and we'll catch you next time.